Tape recorded message number TL 303. Otis Q. Sellers, Bible Teacher. I greet you in the faith and fellowship of our great God and Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, whose we are, whom we love, and whom we serve. Open your Bibles to the prophecy of Jeremiah, chapter 49, and we continue our consideration of the word spoken by the Lord through Jeremiah in regard to the various peoples and nations which had at some time or other come in contact with Israel. These are all to be overrun by Nebuchadnezzar, even though some very definite promises are made to him. And in chapter 49, verse 1, Jehovah here speaks about the Ammonites, not to them, but concerning them. Concerning the Ammonites, thus saith the Lord. He asked a question, hath Israel no sons? Hath he no heir? Why then doth their king inherit Gad, and his people dwell in his cities? You see, the tribe of Gad, which was on the east side of Jordan, was among the very first to be carried into captivity. Tiglath-Pileser took them away, long before the northern kingdom of Israel was carried away by Shalmaneser, as recorded in the book of Kings and the book of Chronicles. And in that portion of the country that had been vacated, the Ammonites had settled. And now, as time drew near for them to be possessed by Nebuchadnezzar, the question is asked, has the tribe of Gad no heirs? So that Moloch, the god of the Ammonites, the king, should inherit their land, and Moloch's people live in the cities of God. Now here is the prophecy concerning Ammon. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will cause an alarm of war to be heard in Rabbah of the Ammonites, and it shall be a desolate heap. Her daughters shall be burned with fire. Then shall Israel be heir unto them that was his heir, saith the Lord. Howl, O Heshbon, for I is spoiled. Cry, ye daughters of Rabbah, gird you with sackcloth. Lament, and run to and fro by the hedges, for their king shall go into captivity, and his priest and his princes together. So the time would come when the Ammonite royal city, the city of its kings, Rabbah, would be destroyed by war. All the villages that surrounded it would be burned, and Israel will again inherit that which the Ammonites had taken over and thus dispossessed them. So he says, let these towns lament in sackcloth, and the villages around Rabbah, the fences that they have built up, they think that these will protect them, but they will not. For Moloch, the word means king, will go into captivity with his priest and his princes. And this is actually quoted from a prophecy of Amos, Amos 1:15, a prophecy that was written before this. Now here is the Lord's question to the daughter of Ammon. Wherefore gloriest thou in the valleys, thy flowing valley, O backsliding daughter, that trusted in her treasures? Interesting to note here that he speaks of a flowing valley. In the book of Genesis, he speaks of, the book of Genesis speaks of the uttermost bound of the flowing hills. Here is a valley that flows, and the idea of flowing hills or a flowing valley meant that it was very fruitful. So the Lord's question, Jehovah's question, is why is it that you families of the Ammonites who have forsaken the true God, yet you glory in the wealth of your valleys, and you trust in the treasures that you have laid up? Now, the daughter of Ammon speaks saying, "Who shall come unto me?" She says, "I'm in a secure place. I'm in a place where no enemy can reach me." But here is the reply of Jehovah, verse 5. "Behold, I will bring a fear upon thee, saith the Lord of hosts, from all those that be about thee. And ye shall be driven out every man right forth, and none shall gather up him that wandereth." And this word just says that their imagined security is going to be turned to fear from every side, that they all must go into captivity, each one straight away, immediately, without looking back, and no one will gather together those who are scattered. And yet there is the promise of restoration. "And afterward I will bring again the captivity of the children of Ammon, saith the Lord." So a definite limit is placed upon their captivity, and the Lord will restore the children of Ammon. Now we might wonder about this, but let us remember that Ammon and Moab were closely related, for the children of Ammon were also the children of Lot. And the two nations, they had their times of victory while they retained some knowledge of the true God. At that time, they drove out the Amorites. They slew the giants that possessed the land. But they were not able to retain what they had taken because of their half-hearted allegiance to the Lord. And their allegiance to the Lord was always weakened as idolatry progressed among them, and it left them no match for the wholehearted devotion to Satan of the Amorites. For this was manifested in all kind of idolatry, so that the iniquity of the Amorites was well known. You remember that the Lord said to Abraham, "You won't get the land of Palestine yet because the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full." So the Amorites therefore later drove out Moab and Ammon from much that they possessed. But when the children of Israel came there on their wilderness journey in the second generation, after they had been purged in the idolatry they had brought out of Egypt, they utterly defeated the Amorites and they possessed the land. Now, there was an argument in later days between Jephthah and the king of Ammon as to who possessed those lands. Jephthah's contention was that the inheritance was one which the Lord had given to his people Israel, that Ammon and Moab had proved their inability to hold it, and therefore they were wrong in claiming it. Well, that is what we have concerning the Ammonites and concerning their cities. And now in verse 7, the Lord speaks about Edom, E-D-O-M. "Concerning Edom, thus saith the Lord of hosts." Now, Edom is the country of the descendants of Esau. It's the name given to the nation of the children of Esau. In the second part of the 7th verse, it says, "Is wisdom no more in Teman? Is counsel perished from the prudent? Is their wisdom vanished? Flee ye, turn back, dwell deep, O inhabitants of Dedan. For I will bring the calamity of Esau upon him, the time that I will visit him." And now Teman, this was a city in Edom, and it took its name from Teman, a grandson of Esau, the son of Eliphaz, who probably was the first one of Job's three friends. It was noted for the wisdom and prudence of its founders. Now the Lord asked, "Have these qualities ceased among them?" The counsel that the Lord now gives to Dedan, also representing Edom and connected with Teman, is to turn and fly, flee and hide, because the time of Esau's calamity is near. Now, in verses 9 and 10, he speaks of how completely that Edom is going to be spoiled. "If grape gathers come to thee, would they not leave some gleaning grapes?" This was customary, to leave something for the gleaners. "If thieves by night, they will destroy till they have enough. But I have made Esau bare, I have uncovered his secret places, and he shall not be able to hide himself. His seed is spoiled, and his brethren and his neighbors, and he is not. Now, gleanings were usually left by the harvesters, and of course thieves take what they want and leave what they do not want. But of Esau, his children, his brethren, his neighbors, nothing will be left. And in this prophecy about Edom, Jeremiah quotes from a man who was living and prophesying at the same time, Obadiah. He was a prophet who also saw the destruction of Jerusalem. One of these could have quoted from the other, or God could have given the same message to both of them. There is a promise here of protection. Leave thy fatherless children, I will preserve them alive, and let thy widows trust in me. And even though these children must become fatherless, and the wives must become widows, God will care for them. Indeed, as we're told in the 68th Psalm, that God is a God of the fatherless, and he's a judge of the widows. That is what God is in his holy habitation. Now this is the judgment that comes upon Edom. For thus saith the Lord, Behold, they whose judgment was not to drink of the cup have assuredly drunken. And art thou he that shall go altogether unpunished? Thou shalt not go unpunished, but thou shalt drink of it. For I have sworn by myself, saith the Lord, that Bozrah shall become a desolation, a reproach, a waste, and a curse, and all the cities thereof shall be perpetual waste. I have heard a rumor from the Lord, and an ambassador is sent unto the heathen, that is, unto the nation, saying, Gather ye together and come against her, and rise up to the battle. For lo, I will make thee small among the nations, and despised among men. Thy terribleness hath deceived thee, and the pride of thine heart, O thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, that holdest the height of the hill, though thou shouldest make thy nest as high as the eagle, I will bring thee down from thence, saith the Lord. And Edom shall be a desolation. Every one that goeth by it shall be astonished, and shall hiss at all the plagues thereof, as in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, and in the neighbor cities thereof, saith the Lord. No man shall abide there, neither shall a son of man dwell in it. So here we know that Edom must drink of the cup of the wrath of God. Bozrah is here used to represent all the cities of Edom, which would become and remain waste. The Lord has sent his messengers, and they will call for all the families, the kingdom of the earth, under Nebuchadnezzar against Edom, and compared with them, Edom will seem like a very small adversary, just a pygmy fighting a giant, one to be despised. The lofty thoughts that she's had of herself and her power, these have deceived her. The capital city, and of course the chief fortress of Edom, Selah, or the rock, was built among inaccessible rocky mountains and was itself built on and tunneled and excavated into the rock. Even though this were true, it should fall. Passers through afterward would still be astonished. It would become desolate, and it would become uninhabited. Now in the 19th verse, the vision is enlarged. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan against the habitation of the strong. But I will suddenly make him run away from her. And who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? For who is like me? And who will appoint me the time? And who is that shepherd that shall stand before me? Nebuchadnezzar was the winged lion. He would come up from his lair in the reedy jungle that was on the banks of the Jordans, right to Edom's stronghold. And so simple and easy would Nebuchadnezzar's conquest of Edom be that it would be accomplished in the twinkling of an eye. For no sooner would the land be invaded than the victory would be completed, and Nebuchadnezzar would be dispatched to other services. Then the question asked of the Lord, who is that shepherd that can stand before me? The one whom he had chosen appointed against Idumea was Nebuchadnezzar. But Israel refused to acknowledge Nebuchadnezzar as God's chosen instrument, his servant who was to execute his judgments. And it was a great part of Jeremiah's witness to reveal that the Lord had taken the kingdom from Israel and given it into the hands of this king. And it was Judah's refusal to accept this that brought about the destruction of Judah. Therefore, this appeal. Who can call God to account for this? Who can resist his purpose? Because it was from the Lord, and only from the Lord, that Nebuchadnezzar had the power. He couldn't have done it apart from God giving him the power to do these things, the very things that God had appointed him to do as the executor of his judgments, his punishments. Now, we read, therefore, hear the counsel of the Lord. This is verse 20. That he hath taken against Edom, and his purposes that he has purposed against the inhabitants of Teman. Surely the last of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he shall make their habitations desolate with them. The earth is moved at the noise of their fall, and the cry of the noise thereof was heard in the Red Sea. Behold, he shall come up and fly as the eagle, and spread his wings over Bozra. And at that day shall the heart of the mighty men of Edom be as the heart of a woman in her pangs. So the weakest of Nebuchadnezzar's army will take the Edomites out of their land and will carry them away captive. Idumea will cast out its inhabitants, and the noise of their fall will cause the earth to tremble, and the sound of their sorrow, their cries, will reach the Red Sea, because Nebuchadnezzar was to come and he would overwhelm Bozra, and the very chiefs of Edom would be helpless before him. And all of these countries were subdued by Nebuchadnezzar 5 years after the fall of Jerusalem. Now, in the 23rd verse, Jehovah speaks concerning Damascus. Really, this prophecy concerns Syria, of which Damascus was the chief town. See, it begins with verse 23 of chapter 49 concerning Damascus. It declares, Hamath is confounded, and Arpad, for they have heard evil tidings. They are faint-hearted. There is sorrow on the sea. It cannot be quiet. Now, these were cities of Syria, just like Damascus was the chief town and stood for Syria. So also Hamath and Arpad are cities of Syria. And they all had their own local gods, and they had their own kings. And Sennacherib, in attacking Hezekiah and Jerusalem, boasted that these had not been able to save them out of their hands. Now again they are threatened, and they're anxiously disturbed like the sea when it cannot be quiet. Reminds us of that passage in Isaiah, the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest. And so these have become like the sorrow of the sea, it cannot be quiet. In verse 24, Damascus is waxed feeble and turneth herself to flee, and fear has seized on her. Anguish and sorrows have taken her as a woman in travail. How is the city of praise not left, the city of my joy? And so the very city of Damascus, this celebrated city, has become weak, and the people are flying from it for fear, and they are helpless. There is no one to help them in their need. And the Lord asks, how utterly forsaken has this renowned city become, the very citadel in which I rejoice. Now Jehovah speaks of Damascus. Therefore her young men, this is verse 26, therefore her young men shall fall in her streets, and all the men of war shall be cut off in that day, saith the Lord of hosts. And I will kindle a fire in the wall of Damascus, it shall consume the palaces of Ben-Hadad. And thus ends the prophecy concerning Damascus or Syria. And we see from these that the weakness and fear will be very definitely seen in the young men of Damascus, who would be her warriors and the source of her strength, and they would fall in her streets, and the trained warriors would be cut off in the day she is attacked by Nebuchadnezzar. And this is the word of the Lord of hosts, who would cause the defenses of Damascus to fail and destroy her government. Now, Ben-Hadad was the official title of several kings of Syria, just like Caesar was the official title of a number of the emperors. So Ben-Hadad was the official title of several kings of Syria. Now, you will remember that I told you in the beginning of these studies that if we attempted to interpret and enlarge on every detail, it would take us literally years to cover the book of Jeremiah, because almost every name we come upon is connected with the history of that times, and only the most careful student of this history can come to a clear understanding of these things. We're just seeking to learn the lesson from this, but remember that just like Philistia was located between Judah and Egypt, that is Israel and Egypt, also Syria lay between Israel and Assyria, and that is the location, and this is part of the history with which we would need to examine in detail, both from secular history as well as the biblical history, and it requires great familiarity with the Book of Kings and the Book of Chronicles and all the things that took place at that time. Now the next prophecy concerns Kedar, K-E-D-A-R. This concerns Kedar and concerning the kingdoms of Hazor, which Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, shall smite. Now we can see here that this is a prophecy about Kedar and about the kingdoms of Hazor. Now, Kedar was the son of Ishmael, and these, his descendants, are related to Israel. They were a nomadic people, and they inhabited the desert between Arabia and Babylon, east of Palestine. And even these wandering tribes are to be subdued under Nebuchadnezzar. By the way, some of you may wonder about the difference in spelling, that sometimes this is spelled Nebuchadnezzar, and sometimes there is an R in there, and the difference would be in the Babylonian form of the name and the way that the Hebrews would have used this name. Now the Lord speaks, thus saith the Lord, arise ye, go up to Kedar, and spoil the men of the east. Their tents and their flocks shall they take away. They shall take to themselves their curtains, and all the vessels, and all their camels. So the Lord gives this command to the Assyrians. They are to go to Kedar, and they are to spoil these Arab tribes, these nomadic tribes. And they were to take with them their tents and their flocks, and they are to take possessions of their curtains, all of their vessels, and all of their camels. And they shall cry unto them, fear is on every side. In other words, the Babylonian army, they were to shout as they attacked these wandering Bedouin tent dwellers, fear is on every side. And we have already come upon this expression several times in the book of Jeremiah. All right, we go on to the 30th verse, where Jehovah speaks to the inhabitants of Hazor. Flee, get you up. Dwell deep, O ye inhabitants of Hazor, saith the Lord. For Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, hath taken counsel against you, and hath conceived a purpose against you. Now, their counsel here to fly, to get far away and to hide, because Nebuchadnezzar has a scheme which requires for its accomplishment the overrunning of their country and the destroying of their independence. Now, in verse 31, the Lord speaks to the Babylonians. Arise, get you up unto the wealthy nation that dwelleth without care, saith the Lord, which have neither gates nor bars, which dwell alone. And their camels shall be a booty, and the multitude of their cattle a spoil. And I will scatter into all winds them that are in the utmost corners. So here we discover that the Lord is using Nebuchadnezzar to accomplish his purpose. So he calls on him, Nebuchadnezzar, and calls upon him to take his armies and to march upon Hazor and all these regions of northern Palestine. Because these regions have long enjoyed peace, and they've neglected their defenses. They have no alliance with any other nation to help protect them. So their wealth that they have, their camels and their cattle, will just be easy picking, and they will not be able to stand together or to resist, but will be scattered everywhere. So in the end of verse 32, says, I will bring their calamity from all sides thereof, saith the Lord. In verse 33, and Hazor shall be a dwelling for dragons, a desolation forever. There shall no man abide there, nor any man dwell in it. And so the calamity would break upon them from every side. And just as it had been with Kedar, so would it be with Hazor. It would be desolate, and it would be uninhabited. Now, the Lord speaks concerning Elam. The Lord through Jeremiah. It just doesn't concern it, but this is the word of the Lord, verse 34. The word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet against Elam in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah. So this carries us back. Because this prophecy was given in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah. So here the Lord foretells the scattering of Elam. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will break the bow of Elam, the chief of their might. And upon Elam I will bring the four winds and the four quarters of heaven, and I will scatter them toward all those winds, and there shall be no nation whither the outcast of Elam shall not come. So the very strength of Elam is to be shattered. The attack is to come from the four quarters of the earth, and therefore her scattering would be to all of those quarters. In verse 37, I will cause Elam to be dismayed before their enemies, and before them to seek their life. And I will bring evil upon them, even my fierce anger, saith the Lord, and I will send the sword after them till I have consumed them. This speaks of their great dismay in the face of their enemies. Evil would come to them from the hand of the Lord, and they would be consumed by the sword. Now in verse 38, I will set my throne in Elam, and I will destroy from thence the kings and the princes, saith the Lord. Now the throne, that is the seat of government of Nebuchadnezzar. That's what a throne always means. Doesn't mean that any ornate chair or fanciful seat was going to be carried there, but the seat of government of Nebuchadnezzar, who was God's servant, was going to be set up in Elam for the judgment of her kings and her princes. And in verse 39 it says, but it shall come to pass in the latter days that I will bring again the captivity of Elam, saith the Lord. Now, those latter days is the Hebrew word akarith, and God has promised that he will bring again the captivity of Elam. So Elam came under Nebuchadnezzar's power, but afterwards with Media and Persia inherited his kingdom. And these Elamites are especially mentioned. Well, we find them in Acts 2. Some of their descendants had gathered there, and they heard these wonderful words of God that were spoken in all languages on the day of Pentecost. And that brings us to the end of chapter 49. Now we come to chapter 51, and this concerns Babylon and Chaldea. The word that the Lord spake against Babylon and against the land of Chaldeans by Jeremiah the prophet. Now you will notice here the change. For up until now, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon have been spoken of as inflicting the judgments of God upon other nations. Many, many nations, we have seen this. Now there comes a prophecy of the most definite punishment that's to fall on the king of Babylon. And the time of this prophecy is the fourth year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, when the power and glory of Babylon was at their height under Nebuchadnezzar. Now it will not fall under Nebuchadnezzar, it will fall under his successors. But just at the time that the prophecy was spoken, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon was at their very height. Now, verse 2, declare ye among the nations, and publish and set up a standard. Publish and conceal not. Say, Babylon is taken. Bel is confounded. Merodach is broken in pieces. Her idols are confounded. Her images are broken in pieces. For out of the north there cometh up a nation against her, which shall make her land desolate, and none shall dwell therein. They shall remove, they shall depart, both man and beast. So this was to be a declaration to be made among the nations. Nations which were being taken into captivity by Babylon, and it was to be announced that her gods, Bel and Merodach, with all her idols and images, are destroyed. It was the nations of the Medes that came from the north, came with the Persians and the Elamites, they came against her and her land would become desolate and uninhabited. This speaks of the future of Babylon. Now, in verse 4, in those days and in that time, saith the Lord, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah together. going and weeping, they shall go and seek the Lord their God. They shall ask the way to Zion with their faces thitherward. Now, when Babylon falls, there will be a godly remnant of both Israel and Judah. And it will be a submissive remnant. And they will seek the Lord their God, and they will set out on their way to go back to Zion. This is most interesting. Now here's what the remnant says. They say, come, let us join ourselves to the Lord in a perpetual covenant that shall not be forgotten. For this remnant out of Judah and out of Israel are wholly determined to accept and to keep the Lord's covenant. Now, beginning with the sixth verse and even into the seventh verse, the Lord shows his great feeling and his compassion upon his people. He says, my people have been lost sheep. Their shepherds have caused them to go astray. They have turned them away on the mountains. They have gone from mountain to hill. They have forgotten their resting place. All that found them have devoured them. And so, the Lord describes the plight of his people, led astray by their shepherds to practice idolatry upon every mountain and on every hill, and they actually forgot the good place that the Lord had brought them, that land flowing with milk and honey. And everyone that they met on their way into captivity did them hurt. And this is what their adversary said. Their adversary said, we offend not, because they have sinned against the Lord, the habitation of justice, even the Lord, the hope of their fathers. And so we see that their enemies justified themselves in despoiling them by saying that Israel had sinned against the Lord. And they determined in their own mind that the justice of the Lord required that they should suffer for it. Now the Lord calls to his people in Babylon. In verse 8, remove out of the midst of Babylon, and go forth out of the land of the Chaldeans, and be as the he-goats before the flocks. So a call goes out, the Lord's people, in all Chaldea, for leaders to lead his flock back to Zion. Now, here the Lord speaks about Babylon. It is a rather long portion. But it is most interesting. For lo, I will raise and cause to come up against Babylon an assembly of great nations, the north country, and they shall set themselves in array against her. From thence she shall be taken. Their arrows shall be as of a mighty expert man. None shall return in vain. And Chaldea shall be a spoil. All that spoil her shall be satisfied, saith the Lord. Because ye were glad, because ye rejoiced, O ye destroyers of mine heritage, because you're grown fat as the heifer at grass, and bellow as bulls. Your mother shall be sore confounded. She that bare you shall be ashamed. Behold, the hindermost of the nations shall be a wilderness, a dry land and a desert. Because of the wrath of the Lord it shall not be inhabited, but it shall be wholly desolate. Every one that goeth by Babylon shall be astonished and hiss at all her plagues. Put yourselves in array against Babylon round about. All ye that bend the bow, shoot at her. Spare no arrows, for she has sinned against the Lord. Shout against her round about. She hath given her hand. Her foundations are fallen. Her walls are thrown down. For it is the vengeance of the Lord. Take vengeance upon her, as she hath done. Do unto her. Cut off the sower from Babylon, and him that handleth the sickle in the time of harvest. For fear of the oppressing sword, they shall turn every one to his people, and they shall flee every one to his own land. So the word here is, spoken long before it took place, that the Medes from the north, that the Persians and the Elamites, that they're going to converge upon Babylon, and when they shoot, that their arrows will not miss the mark. And all of the spoil that they take will be just as much as the spoilers can remove, that they can carry away. But just because the Chaldeans themselves had rejoiced in spoiling Judah, and they had fattened themselves upon her spoils, so this is what the Medes and the Persians and the Elamites will do. And this generation, which was in its fall, will look back upon the former generation, which was used to prosperity, to be ashamed at the change. So thus the first will become last. Chaldea will be just a wild and a dry desert. Yes, he says the time will come when the fields will be forsaken, no seed will be sown, no harvest will be reached, and everyone will fly to his own land for fear of the sword. Well, I don't like to stop at that point. We come to a great promise here in regard to the people of Israel, but we'll have to stop at this place and, the Lord willing, take this up in our next study. I trust that you're finding this helpful and instructive. The important thing is that we gain familiarity with the Word of God, and as we go through these things, to keep saying to ourselves, is there anything here that corrects me? Is there anything here that instructs me? Is there anything here that teaches me? And the answer is, of course, most certainly, yes. It has been my pleasure to teach you, and I thank you for listening, and we meet again around the pages of God's book. I bid you goodbye. Is, of course, most certainly, yes. It has been my pleasure to teach you, and I thank you for listening, and we meet again around the pages of God's book. I bid you goodbye.